You are listening to Radio Aryan.
And welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 20th of May 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. It's the start of another week, and that means we must have with us Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, thank you. It's been a very relaxing weekend that I've had so far, and looking forward to the new week.
And you've got a new microphone there, which I'm sure our listeners will be pleased to know about. I'm sure they've realised already. Yeah, that's great.
Upgrading the equipment.
Yeah, that's great. That is good. We do like to have good equipment here at Radio Aryan because we do care about the product that we put out for our listeners. And we've got lots of stuff to get into today. And of course, mainly it's going to be about the European Union campaign, which election day is now next Thursday. It's really rushing up quickly. I think it's going to be a huge win for the populists. I think combined, the anti-EU parties are going to be roughly about half the vote. And I think Theresa May, I mean, she's just gone, basically. She's going to be out by the 30th. Apparently, she's going to be putting in her dog's dinner of a deal for the fourth time. Of course, it's not going to pass. It's going to fail even more spectacularly than it has ever failed before. And she has said that when it does fail, she will then resign. So basically, we're going to have the results of this election, which is going to be a huge embarrassment for both Labour and Conservatives. And then she's just going to be slaughtered with this final deal. So May's going to be gone, and we are going to have populists riding high. We're going to have Tommy Robinson in there. I think we're going to have UKIP in there. We're going to have loads of the Brexit party in there. Theresa May's going to step down. We probably end up with Boris Johnson stepping into her shoes. And of course, this has got the left absolutely fuming. They are really, really furious at what is going on. They're doing all they can to sabotage the populists when they're out campaigning. And in particularly, Tommy Robinson is really being sabotaged. Stripe, the American company, they're a bit of an alternative to PayPal. They process credit cards. They removed his ability to receive donations for his election campaign. So he had no means of getting any money. Then he managed to get an American lawyer that wrote to them and said, well, look, this is a legal election campaign. You are election meddling. And they have agreed to reinstate it for another 14 days. So thankfully, he can still receive donations for that. But they've cut him off from receiving donations for his news site. And of course, this has been going on for years now. They tried to take away all our means of actually getting any donations. So we really have to do this for the love of doing it and out of a sense of duty to our people. And I do have to give him credit for continuing to do what he's doing and to put all this money into it. I mean, it's costing thousands, I think hundreds of thousands, for him to send out leaflets for this campaign that he's on, and his campaign bus that he's had, a special bus there with a stage on it and a studio. That's had all the windows smashed. The driver has been intimidated into not driving anymore. And then, of course, on Friday, we had this huge riot that took place in Oldham, and I expect most of our listeners have seen some of the footage of this, but really, really shocking, because apparently the police just escorted this gang of masked Muslims onto a white non-Muslim estate in Oldham where he was due to be speaking, and then the police just stood back while the Muslims threw bricks and bottles at the Tommy supporters, and the Tommy supporters were families. It was women, it was children there. And this armed group, because they did turn up armed, they had big crates of eggs that they were bringing with them. They were all masked up. They had bricks, they had rocks, they had bottles that were filled with urine, that were the tops were sort of half open, that they threw at them. They smashed the windows of five cars. mean, this was a street gang, basically, and it's terrorism. I mean, this is political violence. This is violence to try and shut down your political opponents. It's not being reported as terrorism, of course. In the media, there's no mention at all of this group, the Muslim Defense League. They live streamed it all while they were doing this on Facebook. Remember, we were told there was a big meeting this week. But Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand, she had a big powwow in Europe about how we must stop for Facebook from hosting any nationalist sites. They must invent software to stop people live streaming terrorist activities. And none of it seems to apply to Muslims. Their website, their Facebook, Muslim Defense League, encouraging people to go to this specifically so they could attack Tommy Robinson, that was still up. The live streaming of all these women and children screaming, running away from having bricks thrown at them and all the rest, that was all live streamed. Nothing's been mentioned about that in the media. You can see the police are just standing around. They're just watching it. And apparently the police actually escorted this group, and they could see that they were armed. And the excuse they had was, oh, well, people have got a right to counter-protest. This wasn't a counter-protest. This was an attempt to start a race war. And this was terrorism facilitated by the police. Absolutely shocking. Max, did you hear about this at all? Did you see any of this? Did you hear about it in the news at all?
Well, I haven't heard a great amount about it, but I have read what's in the news today. And yes, as you say, it is disgusting, really, that this sort of thing takes place. But this is the sort of thing that we nationalists have come to expect over the years. A situation where, as far as the police are concerned, they seem to turn a blind eye when there are physical attacks against nationalists. You almost get the impression that there is that the ethnic minority gangs that attack and the left-wing gangs that attack nationalist demonstrations are almost the state acting by proxy, where they're using other organizations to try and oppress and suppress the nationalist right and the populist political campaigns. And if this was happening in any other country, if this sort of thing was happening in Russia, for example, if the Russian police were escorting people to attack Russian citizens, then the BBC would be complaining about how it was suppressing democracy and how awful it is, etc. And yet the BBC just turn a blind eye. They don't call it what it is, because it is actually terrorism. If you use violence or the threat of violence for political purposes, that is terrorism. And it's ironic and really that the left always try to pretend that it is the nationalist right who are the potential terrorists. They always try to pretend that it's us who are the threat to democracy, when in reality they are the terrorists. You can see them on the streets. You only have to attend a nationalist meeting or a nationalist rally somewhere to see left-wing terrorism on our streets and to realize that it's not us that's doing it, it's the left, and the left are doing it as a proxy for the state, and it's state oppression of populism, state oppression of nationalism.
Useful idiots. They're just the state's useful idiots. I mean, this campaign that started in Oldham, and it was arranged with the police, and they went to a white area, because obviously Oldham and Rochester, they are hotbeds of Muslim grooming gangs. There's been lots of white children that have been raped by Muslims there. So, of course, he wanted to go there and speak to the white people there and say, you haven't been forgotten. I'm standing there speaking for you. Every penny I get from the EU will be donated to charities that are helping out with the victims of the grooming. So he went to the white areas and everything was peaceful. And then it was the evening rally where this occurred. And the BBC, who you mentioned there, they reported on this. Of course, no mention whatsoever of the Muslim Defense League. In fact, that name hasn't been put in any of the mainstream media reporting. If you read the mainstream media reports, you would think that this was the Tommy Robinson supporters that were carried out all this violence and smashed windows of police cars. And apparently, Tommy Robinson supporters were just picking up the bricks, picking up the rocks, and handing them to the police. There you go. That's what's being thrown at us. You know, very, very few of them were actually throwing them back. Apparently there were scissors that were thrown. There were bladed articles that were thrown. And the BBC reported on this, and they had a quote from Jim McMahon, Labour MP for Oldham West and Royton, and he tweeted, "It's horrible to see our town being used for hate and division when our own future is a shared one, long after the circus has left town. Very different from our own stall in Oldham earlier today, where we celebrated our town." And I thought that was absolutely disgusting. I mean, what you've got there is you've got a gang of criminals, a gang of Muslim criminals intent on terrorism, and this Labour MP seems to think that it's something he can be proud of when he says, well, our stall wasn't attacked by them. I mean, what does that say to the public? That says that they are in cahoots with them. That says that the Muslim terrorists don't have a problem with the Labour Party. You know, this criminal gang, they have no problem with the legal opposition. And it's really saying that they're both on the same side. And this Jim McMahon thought this was a good thing to say. This will make the Labour Party look good. I don't think it makes the Labour Party look good at all to say, well, it was only the other guys that were attacked, not us. I mean, he should be saying intimidation of people when they are campaigning for elections is not on. We spoke about this last week in the Houses of Parliament. The MPs are talking about making a law to prevent intimidation. This is exactly what's happening. But no, he's just saying, well, I'm so proud that it wasn't us that was attacked. It was only our opposition that were attacked.
And when you consider how much police action there was to harass Tommy Robinson when he was the leader of the English Defence League, and the fact that he was, you know, had his house raided on several occasions, and the fact that he was prosecuted for on trumped up charges for various things, and then you look at the kid gloves treatment that's being meted out to the Muslim Defence League. You know, what is the difference between the English Defence League and the Muslim Defence League? If one of them is regarded as racist, why isn't the other one regarded as racist? If one of them is regarded as potentially terroristic, why isn't the other one regarded as potentially terroristic, particularly when the members of that Muslim Defence League are turning up, as you say, to meetings or turning up to rallies armed and obviously intent on committing acts of violence?
Well, that's the thing. They're the ones that are dividing communities, and they were the ones that came in from outside of Oldham. They came in from all across the north of the country, and from further beyond than that, specifically just to attack this peaceful rally that was filled up with families. I mean, this wasn't an English Defence League rally. This was a rally by a legitimate contender for the European Union Parliament that was just speaking to the community there, and he's quite happy to speak to Muslims. He's spoken to quite a few Muslims and debated with them on the campaign trail, and yet it was this group that wanted to cause violence. And as you say, it's all being covered up. It's totally the opposite of the way that the English Defence League were treated. So in a way, I mean, it's probably good that they're calling themselves Muslim Defence League, because that will highlight to people the different way that they are being treated to the way that Tommy was. And, you know, just the BBC, the language that they use, they claim that they are unbiased, they claim that they are objective, and yet they use these terms all the time, like far right, neo-Nazi, white supremacist. They use it in headlines. When they are reporting about nationalists or populists or Tommy Robinson, they'll call him far right or a white supremacist. If it's a nationalist, if it's someone like Jez Turner or someone like us at Radio Aryan, we'll be neo-Nazi white supremacists. And you just think, well, hang on a minute. Why do we never hear the term far left? Why do we never hear the term neo-Bolshevik? I mean, just this term white supremacist, I mean, the alternate to that would be black bastard. Why aren't we calling these blacks that carry out these horrific crimes, why aren't we calling them black bastards? I mean, if they're going to call people white supremacists, and that's okay language to use, why not black bastards as well? Of course, you'll never hear them saying that, but if they claim to be objective and unbiased, that's the sort of thing that we should be hearing. They're quite clearly, they are biased against us, the same as the MPs. I've got a list here of people that have openly supported and glorified the violence against Tommy Robinson. I got this off of Twitter, and it's all got the links there to show that this is what they have said. You've got Johnny Mercer, who's an MP, and he's also rubbished Gerard Batten for supporting the veterans and their cause because of all these frivolous lawsuits that are against them. So Johnny Mercer has encouraged violence against Tommy. He's supported it. Billy Bragg, the musician. Robert Myers, a barrister, he has supported it. Have I Got News For You? The official Twitter from Have I Got News For You has encouraged people to throw things at Tommy. James Treadwell, Professor of Criminology at Staffordshire University. David J. Solomons, Labour Party member. And he actually tweeted Tommy Robinson's location, where he was going to be that day, as well as encouragement to throw things at him. Also, Ash Sarkar, that's that communist female that looks like the image of Cheddar Man that we were shown last year. She's been attacking him like that. Kevin Maguire, editor of The Mirror. Ealing Labour, official Twitter, and of course David Lammy, MP, who was encouraging the youth of the country to fight back and actually had a fist there, an image of the fist. So all these people have supported this, and it started a couple of weeks back with milkshakes being thrown at him. That was all supported and glorified, and the guy that did that was given interviews, and he was saying, oh, I'm fearful for my life now, and he was the one that started it. All Tommy did was try to defend himself, and it was all reported as Tommy Robinson thumps innocent Muslim just whose milkshake just slipped out of his hand. And now it's increased. So now it's rocks, bricks, scissors, bottles of urine that are being thrown, and the alt-light have been highlighting that the same thing happened with Pim Fortuyn, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name, the Dutch politician, this liberal politician who started the party that Geert Wilders is now leading, and he had milkshake thrown over him, and the press thought this was hilarious, and that increased until he was stabbed and he was assassinated. And we've now got exactly the same thing happening over here in Britain. It's already increased, expanded to rocks, bricks and scissors, and still there is no condemnation of it whatsoever. And at the time, I mean, we've got white people being investigated, having charges brought against them simply for singing Anna Soubry as a Nazi. And you've got the MPs in Westminster saying that intimidation of MPs is at a great height and it all must be stopped and it's interfering with the electoral process. And they're not saying a word about this. They're not saying a word about this at all. And if they, you know, if they want to be seen as that they are upholding democracy, they need to be calling out this behaviour. And do they not understand that the general public can see that there's a contradiction here? That the same rules that they want to apply to themselves, they are not applying to the political opposition. And we are the political opposition. I mean, you can't make any bones about it. The Brexit Party are right up there in the lead, 35% in the polls, I think. You can add UKIP to that, another 5%, add Tommy to it. So they're almost half of the projected results in this EU election are going to be for populist parties, and yet you've got the establishment just thinking that it's okay to physically attack these people. I don't know if you want to say anything about this list of people here, Max, before I get on to some of the commercial groups that have also been attacking him.
No, I haven't got anything specific that I want to say against those people. It's just fairly clear, though, and as you said a little bit earlier on, that it's very useful that the Muslims that are attacking Tommy Robinson's demonstrations are calling themselves the Muslim Defence League. They are the Muslim counterpart to the English Defence League, at the very least. And from the reports that we've seen in the news today, it would appear that they are intent on being far more violent than the English Defence League were alleged to be. And in reality, the English Defence League, I don't think there are any great reports of them using violence. It's always been the mass media trying to portray them as potentially violent rather than actually being violent, because at most English Defence League rallies, they were kettled by the police and led off into some deserted car park behind an industrial estate somewhere for them to have their rally or whatever, completely away from everybody else. And yet the police don't seem to apply the same principle. They didn't kettle the Muslim Defence League and lead them off into some little back street car park where they could sound off without actually anybody being able to hear them or whatever. And yet there is just rank hypocrisy in the way in which the two sides are being treated. And it's interesting that the current issues in the news, particularly what's going on here and its relationship to Brexit, is showing that the cleavage within our society today, the main cleavage within our society, isn't between right and left. It's between people who are patriotic and who are opposed to immigration, people who are nationalistic, patriotic and opposed to immigration on the one hand, and people who are internationalist and communist or Bolshevik on the other hand. And
globalists,
and that is the division that we've got at the moment.
Yeah, it's globalists. It's patriots against globalists or nationalists.
That's right.
Against globalists.
And so I think that after these European elections, what there needs to be and what members of the general public need to do is they need to start thinking about which side of that divide are they going to be on. All of the old political party loyalties in this country, whether you support the Labour Party or the Conservative Party or whatever, all those things, those class-based political divisions are now irrelevant, because the only relevant division that exists now is between patriots and nationalists on the one hand and globalists on the other hand. And I think that there needs to be a realignment. And it's interesting that Nigel Farage is talking about a realignment taking place in British politics. And my great hope is that there is that kind of a realignment, because that way the public will see very, very clearly on which side their bread is buttered. And hopefully they will start to vote in their own ethnic interests, instead of doing as they've done in the past, voting along class lines. And if the British public in large numbers start to vote vote in their own ethnic interests, then there will indeed be a dramatic shift in the way in which this country is run. And hopefully we will start to see light at the end of the tunnel as far as the survival of the British people is concerned.
It's only one step away to racial politics, isn't it? I mean, if you've got patriots on the one side and you've got globalists on the other, it's only one small step from patriotism to nationalism to ethno-nationalism. And that's what the left know. They understand this. That's why they go after Tommy Robinson. They know he's not a racist. He's not anti-Muslims. He just criticizes Islam. He's a multiculturalist, and yet he is their number one enemy, because they know that it's just a short step from him to where we are. I mean, this is why I support the guy. I mean, I cannot stand that Avi Yemeni, this Jew that's hanging around on his coattails all the time. You know, I have to choke back the vomit when he's talking about multiculturalism and how wonderfully diverse Luton is. But I just have to go with it, because I know that his supporters will be our supporters. And the fact that he is doing this is great for us. More people come and listen to us because they come into it through Tommy Robinson. He's like a stepping stone to get to us. It's like you don't go straight into ethno-nationalism like a swimming pool. You don't just dive straight in at the deep end if you don't know how to swim. First off, you learn how to swim. And once you know how to swim, then you make it to the deep end. And I think that's a good analogy for this. And we just have to, you know, bite back the criticism and support the guy, because the left understand that and the right needs to understand that as well. I mean, we've also got Burger King here, you know, a big commercial enterprise. They sent out a tweet at the weekend. "Dear people of Scotland, we are selling milkshakes all weekend. Have fun." And that's them deliberately inciting violence. And somebody on Twitter called it out that was an open threat to Tommy Robinson, and Burger King then liked the tweet. So that was who they were talking about. Nigel Farage was in Scotland that day as well. Tommy Robinson had been there earlier on in the week. So this was a threat against Nigel Farage as well. I mean, the enemy sees Brexit Party, UKIP, Tommy Robinson, they all see them as their fair game. they don't have any human rights at all. They don't have any rights. We can physically attack them and we'll just get a pat on the back for that by the establishment. Maybe not so much with the Brexit Party, because the establishment media is really pushing Farage as the alternative. But he's still being targeted. He's still having things thrown at him. His Brexit Party is still being attacked. And they were in the news as well recently. Anti-Brexit protesters attempted to block a road leading to a Brexit Party rally in Merthyr Tydfil Wednesday in order to try and prevent the rally from taking place. Around a dozen campaigners blocked the route to the rally, lining cars up in the middle of the road in an attempt to stop Brexit Party supporters from being able to reach the venue. Christopher Hope of The Telegraph wrote of the attempted disruption. It's all happening in Merthyr Tydfil. Nigel Farage is preparing to give a speech tonight to his supporters in a supermarket car park, and now anti-Brexit campaigners have blocked the road so the Brexiteers cannot get in. Leanne Wood, the leader of the Welsh Nationalist Party, that's what they call themselves, Plaid Cymru, appeared to be in full support of the protests, going so far as to compare the pro-democracy Brexit Party to 1930s fascists, and was even compelled to deny that she had been calling for violence against Brexit supporters in her comments. The controversy over the Welsh Nationalists' remarks started after she wrote online, "Proud of our history, in 1936 Oswald Mosley and his black shirts were turfed out of the Rhondda in the traditional working class way. Will Merthyr people do the same again tonight?" She then went on to describe the Brexit Party as the modern day far right and said that they should be fought with. So here we've got this person that claims to be representing the Welsh people. And don't forget, Wales overwhelmingly voted to leave the EU, even though Wales has been a big recipient of funding from the EU. The Welsh were sensible enough to realise that some things are worth more than money, such as having a country left over to pass on to your descendants. So this woman that claims to be representing the Welsh people is deliberately going against everything that they've said, everything that they have voted for, and she's calling for violence against the Brexit Party, saying that Nigel Farage is a fascist, and you've got these people putting all these cars in the way. I mean, if this was in America, blocking the roads up is a serious crime. I mean, that is a serious crime over there, and in some states you can actually run people over if they are blocking the highway in some form of protest. But this shows you just how strong this feeling is, because they're terrified of what's going to happen in this election, because they know they're going to be massive losses for all the mainstream parties, massive losses for anybody that supports staying in the EU. It's going to be a huge protest vote. And I'm glad that Wales voted to leave, but I'm a little bit disappointed that some group of people try to prevent Nigel Farage speaking, because she says, "Oh, this is the Welsh way." I don't think it's the Welsh way at all. There was a time when there was a swastika that was hoisted up in Cardiff in solidarity with the National Socialist Government about 75 years ago. And I think Plaid Cymru were actually allied with them at one point. I may be wrong there, but there's definitely a photograph of this swastika that was officially flown above Cardiff. And
I think though that the point here though is that although they call Nigel Farage a fascist and try to portray the Brexit Party as being a far right organisation, this is just absolute nonsense. Nigel Farage has gone to great lengths to make sure that nobody that can be considered far right can join his party or represent his party. He's got candidates that are from the ethnic minorities. The only policy they've got at the moment is that they want to leave the European Union. I mean, they haven't actually agreed a schedule of policies beyond that. And so to call Nigel Farage's party fascist or is just utterly ridiculous. All that Nigel Farage wants to do is to get the UK out of all he wants to do initially, I don't know whether he's got ambitions to do other things at a later date, but all he wants to do initially is to get Britain out of the European Union. Getting Britain out of the European Union isn't fascist. Getting Britain out of the European Union is pro-democracy. The European Union isn't a democratic entity. The European Union is modelled on the Soviet Union and the democracy that allegedly exists within the European Union is the same sham democracy that allegedly existed in the Soviet Union many, many years ago. And so those people who are pro the European Union today are effectively the same kind of people who were pro the Soviet Union in its day. And what they've got to do is to think to themselves, you know, is that the kind of person they are? You know, do they really think that the Soviet Union is the sort of country that a modern state, a modern super state, should be modeled on? And would they want Britain to be part of the European Union once it becomes obvious upon examination that the European Union is a super state modeled on the Soviet Union? I don't think many people would. Many ordinary people certainly wouldn't. I imagine there may be a number of crypto communists and crypto Marxists that exist within these other organizations, like Plaid Cymru and the Labour Party, etc. There may well be, and they may, you know, very happily want us to stay within the European Union because it's where their heart tells them that they belong. But I think, as far as the vast majority of people in Britain, the vast majority of people in Wales are concerned, they would have no desire whatsoever to be a part of the Soviet Union as it existed, and therefore also wouldn't want to be part of the European Union today, an organization that denies democracy. Even though they talk about subsidiarity, they actually deny democracy to the countries that are the member states of that organization. And that's why there is this beginning of a rejection now of the European Union in so many other countries across the European Union, in Italy and Poland and Hungary. You know, the politicians there are saying, you know, are starting to ask questions of the European Union now, saying, is this the sort of organization that we actually want to belong to? Because I don't think, as far as the vast majority of Europeans is concerned, that they would want to be part of the European Union. In fact, most of the Europeans I've spoken to aren't keen on the European Union at all, and feel very much the same way that the vast majority of British people do, that they would far rather get out of the European Union, get their own currency back, get control of their own country again, get control of their own, and start to run their countries in their own ethnic interests.
And the only democratic part of the EU is the voting for these European Union MPs. This election that's going on now, that's the only democratic part of the EU. And once these people are voted in, they have no power whatsoever. All the power is the European Union Commission, which nobody gets a chance to pick who they are. That's why nobody's ever heard of them before. Jean-Claude Juncker, Michael Barnier, Herman Van Rompuy, all these sort of people that end up leading the EU Commission. They're the ones that make the laws, that make the rules, and everybody else just has to go along with them. Once these EU MPs, they get into power, they have to form a big groups with a big grouping, and they're not allowed to actually make any legislation. I think they are allowed to send it back. If there's enough of them, they're allowed to send it back to get it changed, but they're not allowed to actually make any changes themselves. I mean, the good thing about this election is that the largest grouping up until now has been Macron and Merkel. And it looks like, I mean, if the populists can, you know, settle their differences, bury their differences, and not let the egos get in the way, then the largest group in the European Union could be this Europe of Nations, which is Marine Le Pen, Salvini, Orban, Poland, Estonia, all these populist groups together could form the largest bloc within the EU. And that's why it's good that Britain's actually taking part, because there is going to be so many Eurosceptics populists that are going to be voted in by Britain next week that they could join this group as well. And this Leanne Wood, I mean, it says here she's the leader of Plaid Cymru, but I think she's actually stepped down and that there's a bloke that's leading them now. It's an offence to call them Welsh nationalists, because they're totally international internationalists. They want to stay within the EU. They want to open Wales up to all the refugees of the world. They've said that they want to take as many as they possibly can. The Welsh people don't want this. It's the same as in Scotland with this group, the SNP, that have got the cheek to call themselves nationalists, and they just want to stay within the EU, open the borders up, have unrestricted immigration, and think that somehow that's going to be of benefit to the Scottish people. This Welsh group are the same. We really do need a proper Welsh nationalist party. I mean, I guess we don't even have the British National Party anymore. All we've really got that are even slightly close to those views is UKIP. Sargon, who we did have high hopes for in the beginning, he seems to really have allowed the narrative to become about his tweets from years ago saying that he wouldn't even rape Jess Phillips, and he really needs to turn that around so that the narrative is about grooming gangs and immigration. I mean, one funny thing I did notice was that the BBC had him on for an interview, and they actually had an offensive jokes expert on there, an academic in offensive jokes who was investigating Sargon's tweet to see whether he was actually joking or not when he said that he wouldn't rape Jess Phillips. And that was quite hilarious to see. And he's also done a couple of good interviews where he's ended up destroying Victoria Derbyshire in particular. But it's all been centred around his "I wouldn't even rape you" tweet, which is just such a shame because UKIP have tanked in the ratings because of that. But I still think he might well get in because he has got a lot of support. And Mark Meacham might well get in as well, but I haven't seen him doing very much campaigning. But Sargon, you've got to give him the credit. He's been out every day for the last month in these towns, talking to people, debating with people, putting it up on YouTube, and they are fun to watch. And that's just about it for the European Union election news this week. Don't forget, it's next Thursday is the election, so get out there and vote for your nearest populist candidate, and we'll cover the results of that next week. And I am looking forward to it. I think this has been the most exciting election that we've had in Britain for a long time, but just because we've got the chance of getting these alternative parties in there and giving the establishment such a thrashing. And you think that the Labour Party, the Conservative Party and the Cuck Party all together, they're not even doing as well in the rankings as Nigel Farage is. So, I mean, even when Nigel Farage wins, I'm still going to see that as a win, even though he's, you know, just the lightest of civic nationalists that there are. But we also had, we've also got trials in the news, the Alice Cutter trial, the accused of being a member of National Action, the jury have been out on that deliberating for the last couple of weeks, which I think is probably positive. Unfortunately, we didn't hear anything of the last 3 weeks of what went on in the trial, so it must have concerned their defence. And of course, the mainstream media doesn't want to report their defence. They just want to report the attacks against them. And we've also had the sentencing of Jack Renshaw for basically making a plan to hijack, kidnap a Labour MP and then get the police officer that was investigating him for grooming to come and negotiate with him. And then he would kill the police officer that investigated him for grooming. So basically it was an elaborate plot to get back at this police officer, and the Labour MP was just purely incidental, but it's been reported as terrorism. And I guess that must be because Jack pleaded guilty to that at first. And he obviously pleaded guilty to that because he thought it would get his friends off the hook, who were also being accused of plotting with him, and it was all supposed to be a National Action plot. Well, that all fell apart. It was decided that it wasn't a National Action plot. It was decided that three of them weren't even members of National Action, including Jack Renshaw himself. But it's still being portrayed as terrorism. He tried to withdraw his plea because it actually went to court for a second time. He'd been on trial twice for being a member of National Action. And on the second time, he said he wanted to plead not guilty to terrorism. And because it wasn't terrorism, I don't understand what the political motive was in killing this police officer or in killing this Labour MP. It's not like this Labour MP is famous for calling for more immigration or anything else. I mean, she just looks like a harmless little old lady. But I did notice that after the trial, she said, you know, well, perhaps we need to get rid of jury trials then, because for the second time, they were found innocent of being members of National Action. And I thought that, you know, that really is not a good thing to say. Perhaps we should get rid of jury trials because this trial didn't get us the results that we wanted. But he's finally been sentenced, and he's been sentenced to 20 years. 20 years just for thinking in his head about kidnapping an MP and killing a policeman and buying a toy sword, basically a huge toy sword that you really would have difficulty actually using for anything. And he's been given more of a jail sentence than murderers get, you know, than rapists get. And this was basically just a plan within his head. It wasn't actually carried out. Nobody knows if he would have actually carried it out. I mean, he was just thinking about it. He hadn't got anybody else to help him in this or anything like that. And he just mentioned it when he was drunk one night. And there was a Hope Not Hate spy that was there as well. And he overheard this. And of course, that's where the case basically took off from there. And the Hope Not Hate spy, he was made out to be a huge hero, but not really, because the jury didn't believe him. The jury didn't believe him, and the jury said, well, three of these young men that you've had on in prison for the last year and a half, accused of being terrorists, they're actually innocent. They're not members of National Action. So you had three people decided not members of National Action. It was Garen Helm and two others that were found not members of National Action recently. And there's been no news reporting on that, the fact that they were innocent men that have been jailed for a year and a half and accused of being terrorists, jailed in solitary confinement, told that they were going to be moved to prisons as far away from their families as possible because they deserved that. So they couldn't see their family, they couldn't see their friends. And the trial, the jury said, well, actually, no, they weren't members of National Action. So there's a lot of stuff that's been going on there that's been kept from the public, I think. But this this jail sentence, 20 years, I mean, that is really, really excessive. I mean, that shows you that they really hated Jack Renshaw for some reason. And, you know, maybe that gives credence to his accusation that this grooming charge that was against him, that was a frame-up. Because this 20-year sentence does show that they have a particular hatred for Jack Renshaw. For some reason, I think. What do you think of this, Max, this 20-year sentence for Jack Renshaw?
Well, I think that the sentence is intended to be exemplary, i.e. it's intended to make an example of Jack Renshaw to deter anybody else from having similar thoughts. I think that after the death of Joe Cox, what the media and the establishment were then looking for was more examples of people plotting to do similar things. And as far as Jack Renshaw is concerned, this has been described as a plot, and a plot suggests to most people that there is a group of people who are making plans, where each one of the group is going to be fulfilling a different function within that plan in order to carry out some dastardly deed. But in reality, that there weren't lots of people involved in this plot. As it turns out, the only person involved in this plot was Jack Renshaw. You know, at the very worst, the only person involved in the plot was Jack Renshaw. And Jack Renshaw was allegedly plotting with himself in order to do this. And the meeting that they went to in the pub was not a National Action meeting. It was quite obvious from the evidence that came out that this was just a group of friends who shared similar political beliefs, going out and having a drink together. And during the course of that night, while they were having drinks, allegedly Jack Renshaw told Robbie Mullen that he intended to kill the MP and intended to kill this police officer. From what I can make out from the transcripts of the trial that have been published, as far as this particular case is concerned, what it appears is that this group of friends met in this pub for a drink. A number of the people that were in the pub that were amongst this group apparently became quite sort of intoxicated, because when they were asked about the, you know, what they had heard from Jack Renshaw explaining this particular plan to them. They said that they had no recollection of him ever saying this, from what I can see from the news reports. And so it would be interesting to listen to a full transcript of the trial, actually, just to see exactly, you know, who said what and who heard Jack Renshaw saying these words, because it appears that it's only Robbie Mullen that actually heard Jack Renshaw say these things. Now, Jack Renshaw admitted that early on that he had planned to kill the MP and the police officer. So that, to some extent, has validated Robbie Mullen's testimony. But who knows whether Jack Renshaw was actually being serious, or whether Jack Renshaw was just a young guy who had a bit too much to drink and who was just fantasizing. You know, was it an actual plan? Was it actually, you know, was it, well, it certainly wasn't a plot, because he wasn't plotting with anybody. You know, was it an actual plan? Was it a serious plan? Did Jack Renshaw give any sort of indication earlier on that he was involved in a serious plan to do this? Because from what I can make out from what's been reported, him mentioning this plan at this meeting was the very first time he'd ever mentioned it. And so it all appears to be very suspect in my view, the accusation against him, etc. So, as I say, I would very much like to read a transcript of the trial so that I can see, you know, exactly what was said by who. And for somebody to be given a 20-year sentence, and this is from what I can see from the news, it's a 20-year sentence without any sort of remission for good behavior or anything of that sort. And so it looks as though Jack is going to have to serve 20 years, which would seem to be an incredibly long period of time to sentence somebody to for simply drunkenly making threats that in all probability they didn't really have the capacity to carry. Because, you know, had Jack Renshaw been a big burly guy who was obviously had the potential, the physical potential to do the sort of things that he was suggesting that he was going to do, then that would be one thing. But Jack Renshaw's, you know, quite a slim, slightly built guy who looks doesn't really look his age. You know, in my view, he looks like a sort of somebody in their middle teens, basically, you know, he just doesn't look like anybody who would actually ever seriously carry out the threat that he made. And so, you know, for somebody to actually take him seriously, I would imagine most people, if they had actually heard him saying that he was going to do this sort of thing, would have just laughed at him and said, "Don't be so silly, Jack. You know, that's not the sort of guy that you are. You're not big enough and hard enough to actually do that kind of thing, even though you might have bought yourself a sword. You know, having a sword doesn't make you a knight. Having a sword doesn't make you a warrior. It just means that you're somebody who owns a sword." And by all accounts, the sword was found in a cupboard in one of Jack Renshaw's relatives' house. It wasn't actually even found in Jack Renshaw's own home, from what I can make out. So, you know, although he may have paid for a sword that was delivered and was, you know, the sword was secreted in one of his relatives' homes in a cupboard somewhere. So, you know, how real was the threat? And so it would have seemed to be that the political establishment in this country have just grasped at this thing and decided to make the most out of it they possibly could, rather than just dismissing it as a sort of juvenile imagination. They've decided that they're going to treat it as if it was a very real, very dangerous threat. And this poor, you know, lady MP has had the frighteners put up needlessly, in my view. It's just a sad case, and it's just very sad that in Britain today that there is this this mood of oppression of anybody who is on the nationalist right, and that there is this desire on the part of the political establishment to pretend that there is some sort of serious threat from the from the nationalist right, when in reality there isn't any threat from the
very little, at least, isn't it?
Very to hand out sentences of 20 years is just way OTT, in my view.
Well, I think Robbie Mullins was found to be an unreliable witness. If Jack Renshaw hadn't pleaded guilty to terrorism, he wouldn't have been found guilty because the jury said didn't believe this witness's story. They didn't believe that this was a National Action plot. They didn't believe that that the people that were meeting up that night in the pub, that they were members of National Action. And the trial was heard twice because they heard it the first time and it didn't get the result that the establishment wanted. So they tried it a second time without new evidence, which I believe you're supposed to have at the very least if you're going to try someone for a second time. I don't think people should be tried for a second time, but they did. And once again, they were found to be innocent of that. And this was in the Old Bailey, which is apparently the best place to actually have a trial is in the Old Bailey, because they will make sure that everything is within the law. If you're going on a trial and you're somewhere like Birmingham, you where everything isn't followed to the exact, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's, you know, they could throw the book at you, but they will actually do everything by the book in the Old Bailey. And that's where this trial was heard. And yet I've heard the politicians say, well, this was a threat right at the heart of democracy. This was an attack right at the heart of democracy. And that wasn't what it was at all. It was a revenge attack. It didn't have any political motive to it. I don't think Jack did himself any favors with some of the speeches that he'd given in the past, talking about executing all Jews and things like that. And, you know, that was just stupid talk, which really came back to haunt him later on when he was accused of this. And I guess what they've done is that they've put his political speeches together and sort of tacked it onto this and made out that it must have been terrorism, when really I think it's quite obvious it was a revenge attack. It was a bit of a crazy idea, which really shows you that his mental state probably wasn't what it should have been at the time. He probably suffered a bit of a nervous breakdown, I would guess, especially if he's been in solitary confinement as well, which would have led to him pleading guilty to this. Because if he hadn't have pled guilty, he would not have been found guilty, because the jury didn't believe the witness, basically.
That's right. But if you go to any pub in Britain and you start talking to people about politics around the table, and I'm not necessarily, you know, saying that it's, you know, people on the nationalist right. I'm talking about anybody. You know, you go into any pub just as an individual. If you stand at the bar and you start talking to the person who's standing next to you that you don't know, and you start talking about politics, and especially if you start talking to them about a subject that they feel passionately about, people will very often use as a term of speech just to indicate how much they politically oppose somebody that you might be talking about, and they might turn around to them and say, oh, they ought to bloody well hang him, and not actually specifying who they are and not actually specifying why they should bloody well hang him, but just because the person objects to the sort of thing that the person you're talking about has said at some point. And yet the person in the pub that you stood next to by the bar would have had a few drinks, would have just been sounding off. They would have no intention of ever actually fulfilling, of going and finding that person and hanging them. They would just, you know, that they're just, it's just words, isn't it? And I can't help thinking that perhaps in this case, and only those people who were present would actually really be able to know whether Jack Renshaw was serious or not. But I doubt very much that he was serious, just by virtue of the fact that it was something that was discussed at a meeting where most of the people that were present were drunk. You know, it was just drink talking. And as you say, it was very, very foolish of Jack to actually admit that he was serious about it. The whole affair really is a sad affair, but it is an indictment of the British legal system that nobody really has got the goodness of heart really just to see that what you've got here is a young lad who's just said something stupid. And who, at the very worst, you know, even if he, you know, did actually think that he was serious when he said it, at the very worst, what he needs is a short, sharp shock. What he doesn't, you know, to stick him in prison for 20 years is not just, it's not just, using a sledgehammer to crack a nut as far as punishing him is concerned. It's also a tremendous waste of British taxpayers' money, because it costs £40,000 a year to keep somebody in prison, and so that's, you know, what, £800,000 that of public money that's going to be wasted just punishing somebody for saying something juvenile and stupid when they were drunk in a pub.
I think the majority of the so-called death threats that these MPs receive on Twitter, I think that's just, you know, exaggerations and people letting off steam and trying to get across just how strongly they feel let down by the politicians. I don't think it's a statement of intent, which is the way that the MPs describe it. I mean, what have we had? We've had, I think Jeremy Corbyn had an egg thrown at him. We've had Joe Cox was actually killed by somebody that they tried to say was a nationalist, but he had no presence online. He wasn't a member of any nationalist groups. All he had was World War II memorabilia at home and books, including books like Schindler's List. I mean, this guy was a Holocaust worshipper. He wasn't a Holocaust denier. And that's it. And yet on the nationalist side of things, we can't go out and have a rally. We can't go out and speak to people. We can't go out and have a meeting without the windows being smashed in. Tommy Robinson gets his bus windows smashed in. The people have rocks and bricks thrown at them. And nothing said about it. You know, that is a credible threat. It's the left that are the credible threat in this country. Not the nationalists. You know, there might be the odd few crazy types like we've had in New Zealand, like we've had in America, but it's a very, very tiny amount of people, and they're the sort of loners. They're not the sort of people that form groups and become a part of a group, because if you become a part of a group, like we have a forum, the Radio Aryan forum there, and if anybody was to start talking about silly things like that, you know, we would put them off that. The group, the friends that they had, the nationalist friends that they had, would put them off doing silly things like that, because doing something like that is not helpful to the cause. All it does is cause websites to get shut down, and it causes people to think that nationalists are dangerous people, they're terrorists, and it means that when we have like this big populist uprising, it could put the populace off wanting to associate with us, you know, because they could see us as being terrorists. So, you know, we've got this great chance here where we can join the populist wave, and we can get some of our talking points into the mainstream, and then we've got people that are determined to sabotage it by making us out to be terrorists. So it really doesn't serve any useful purpose whatsoever. I mean, I see terrorism as just, you know, it's taking the temptation. It's the temptation that is put before us. We know that we're tempted with our vices, and we are tempted with our virtues. And that goes for both sides. You know, the left, they are tempted with their virtues, feeling sorry for refugees and wanting to open up the borders. And the right, the nationalists, our virtues are tempted. When they shut down all our websites, they shut down our speech, and our people think, well, I've got nothing left that I can do. Somebody must do something. Right, I'm going to go there and take out a few of the enemy myself. And once they do that, that they have given in to temptation, basically, and it's their virtue that was being tempted, because they thought that what they were doing was virtuous and it was going to serve their people, but it doesn't. It just ends up serving the enemy, and it doesn't make a dent in them at all. I don't think it, you know, these Jews don't worry about these Jews that were killed in a synagogue. All Jews are killed by pneumonia. You know, we're not a threat to them. Doing something like that is going after the enemy at his strongest point, whereas we need to be going after them at their weakest point. And their weakest point, as we know, is in debate. It's in talking. That's why they try to shut down any chance we get at speech, because they know that that is their weakest point. They can't counter any of our talking points, so they just have to shut it down. And the more we highlight that, exactly like what is happening with Tommy Robinson, exactly like what is happening with this Muslim Defense League that are calling themselves that, I mean, that just shows to the public these double standards, and it causes more of the public to get behind us. Terrorism just causes the public to distance themselves from us and not want to know us. And, you know, that's not what we want. We want support. If we want to achieve any of our aims, I mean, it'd be great to achieve all of them. But, you know, if we want to just achieve one or two, it would be, you know, that would be a great achievement. That's why I support Tommy Robinson. That's why I support UKIP. And that's why I, through gritted teeth, I will be pleased to see Nigel Farage when he wins next week. Max, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next week with more Aryan Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. For an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.